Welcome to Turn Extension, a supplemental podcast for the Advanced Maneuvers YouTube channel.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Turn Extension. My name is Tony, and tonight we've got Gaston. Gaston, you want to say hi?
Hey everybody, how's it going?
And also, we have a special guest on with us. So we have probably one of the, not the first Preskinger I ever met, but definitely one of the most one of the most important ones wow. That I know of. Jan, a.k.a. Devil Squid. How you doing,
like
man?
I would like to say he is my Pharaoh brother from another mother.
Oh, gents, how's it going? And to everyone else, thanks for that staggering intro.
You know, I feel like that's what you have to come to expect when you, if you're going to come on Turn Extension. I messed up saying Matt's name. I couldn't even say Sam's name when he came on. So, you know, with yours, I got to mess up your intro. So, do you want to go by Jan or Double Squid for us? I probably should have asked that beforehand as well.
Jan's fine.
Jan? Okay, cool. So, hi everyone. So today we are here to talk about why choose Mark IV, right? And we decided to bring on this awesome guest, Jan, to kind of talk about that. But before we jump into it, I do want to give a quick reminder about PAX Unplugged. So if any of you guys are going to be in the Philly area on December 3rd, we are going to be hosting the first ever Mark IV tournament. It's going to be a 32-person tournament, 50-point prime list. We're going to do one list. It's going to be fun, casual. We're going to be doing raffles throughout it, and whoever ends up winning first place is going to get a medal from PAX Unplugged. So please come. Please come support. Please come and see the new game and try it out. I'm also going to have a demo table set up, so if you are, you know, not haven't played for a long time, kind of want to see what the new rules are, kind of want to see some of the new models, because unfortunately I don't think the starter boxes will be out by then, but at least those of us who have got our Gen Con boxes will have those out, so you can take a look at those. So please come by on the 3rd. I believe sign-up should be going up in a couple weeks. They said at most it'll be at least 30 days before the event, but they're supposed to be putting it up in the middle of October. I think that's my pitch for that. So, how's everyone doing tonight?
Is there an order? Does the guest speak first? Is it the host?
You know, let's just have the guest speak first.
Can we just talk over each other? That's fine.
It's fine. Jan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Tony, thanks for inviting me on. I appreciate the opportunity to come on. It's been a while since I've really been able to chat about War Machine with folks, so it's nice to kind of stretch those familiar muscles.
That's awesome. Gaston, how are you doing?
I'm definitely hanging in there. We got the bile thralls running around the house right now, just spreading plague everywhere.
Same over here, which is so much fun. You know, the fun thing about having kids is, like, you can almost tell the exact moment you're going to get sick, because, like, if you go to yawn and they cough in your mouth, you're like, oh, this is right when the germs transferred right into my body. Super fun.
Why are you coming to me to have them cough in your mouth?
Well, because if I'm, like, picking them up and I'm, like, in the middle of a yawn, you know, that's kind of what happens.
Have you tried closing your mouth?
I would not want to. Have you ever tried closing your mouth in a mid-yawn?
I close my mouth all the time mid-yawn.
Yeah. Because you are yawn.
It's literally a phrase for it.
No, the pediatrician that my wife and I took our kids to when they were younger, they're like, oh, they're sick. And the doctor was like, yes, they'll spend the majority of their young life sick, and so will you. Talk up. So it's like, I see, and it's funny because, like, I see one of my daughters get sick, and then I'm like, okay, the counter has started. My daughter is sick, which means my other daughter is going to get sick, which means my wife's going to get sick, which means I'll take care of all three of them. And then once they're fine, I'm going to collapse. Then I'll get sick, and I'll collapse, because then my immune system's like, okay, we did our job. We kept things running. And now we're going to go collapse. Leave us alone.
Sorry for everyone too. My daughter decided to start screaming at Moana right next to me, so I had to ask her to go to the other room.
I mean, to be fair, Moana kind of had it coming.
That's true. Okay, so let's just jump into the topic, right? So the topic is why choose Mark IV, right? So This topic kind of hit a different things. You know, why would you choose Mark IV over Mark III? Why would you leave the game that you're playing now to come back and play Mark IV? Why jump into Mark IV at all, Riley? So it's kind of a bunch of different topics. So, and kind of the reason why we came up with this was, Yannick, you posted something a few weeks ago. Do you kind of want to talk about that? Your post into the on the Facebook chat and kind of the, what, 300 plus replies that it it created?
Something like that. So during the week of the weekend of Nova, I went to the Nova Open and I was hanging around the War Machine area and watching people play, and it was really nice just kind of getting back in touch with people that I had known and being in that environment again, especially after COVID and not being able to watch people play a lot of games. And I had a conversation with a longtime friend and player. Hi, John. And the question that we distilled it down to, because he was less than excited about Mark IV, is why should he care? Why should he care that there's a Mark IV? Right? And that was the question that I posed on the Facebook, is why should a player care? Why should somebody invest their time and their money in this new edition of the game coming out, especially since it's such a dramatic change from Mark III, with going to Unlimited and Prime and new armies and new structures of building armies, you know, where you have the armies and the cadres as opposed to everything just kind of mixing together. And I thought it was a very valid question, so I posed that on the Facebook page, and I think I got a moderator fired. I don't know, something. But a lot of people, nice. I'm very thankful, because a lot of people had very good and strong opinions and conversations about it. But from what I saw, I don't know how much moderation was going on. From what I saw, it never really devolved into a people spitting at each other. But it was a legitimate question of, hey, they've announced Mark IV. Why should you care? And so that's I think really the question that a lot of people are kind of stuck not having an answer for right now, looking forward to Mark IV and what the future for that unfolds. And Privateer Press has given us a ton of information, and I really liked Matt Wilson's initial huge post of like, this is everything that we're trying to do, and this is, you know, the plan, and we have a timetable. But unfortunately, you know, we're impatient gamers, and we have Veruca Salt everything. So,
and I think also looking into it, right, is that we are all people that have been around Privateer Press for a long time, right? I played in Mark One, Jan, you played in Mark One. I became a PG in Mark Two. Gaston, I actually don't remember if you played in Mark One or you just played in Mark Two. Did you ever touch on Mark One at all?
I started playing with the field test for Mark Two.
Okay, so you were in the very, 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 very beginning, like when DC put out the field test, right?
Yeah, so, I was doing like, the beta field testing.
Yeah, so we've all been like playing this game for a really long time. So it also comes with a lot of nostalgia and baggage, right? Jumping into Mark Four. So I think what's exciting about this topic, right, is that I've said so, right? I'm a 10 out of 10, right? I'm gonna jump in feet first. I am so excited about this. I'm so excited, by the way, that Siege had a daughter, Sarah Brisbane. Super pumped that she's going to be a playable character. Siege, all-time fan. Love them. So it makes me even more excited about these new models coming out, right? But I'm excited because it's something that it's a brand new faction that I like that's based off of Signar, right? It's the Storm Legion that's coming right out in the beginning of Mark IV. So clearly that's something that's gripping me. If you look at, like Kevin's talked about, there's out of those two, like he's going to look at Orgoth because it's one of the ones, but it's not something that's like sparking his interest that much. Gaston is kind of waiting for Dusk, but we don't know what Dusk is, right? So for those people that don't have anything, what is the draw, right? And I think I got my first taste of it when they said, hey, the new stuff's going to be delayed, right? So I thought, very beginning of Mark IV, I'm going to have my brand new Storm Legion. And what I'm coming out is, you're not. You're going to have to either play a Trenchers, If you want to do Signar, or you're going to need to play Convergence, right? Because those are the two armies I still have. I still have all my Convergence, and I have a bunch of Trencher stuff downstairs in my basement. So I really had to think, as man, like, how excited am I going to be now going to playing with my old stuff? Which, for me, I think it's different. I'm really excited about it still. But I don't know. That's kind of just where I start out. Jan, kind of what'd you go through with your process?
So when they first announced Mark IV, it was very much one of those things was like, I'm going to put this on my radar. Like, I haven't played a lot in recent years, pretty much from like halfway down from Mark III, especially once like Steam Lists became a thing, and just the sheer scale and size of the armies. And, you know, you could go take a 10-minute break and go get a sandwich while your opponent, you know, moved models around and killed stuff. As Gaston mentioned Pharaohs, like, one of the reasons I enjoyed playing the Pharaoh is because with all the tough checks, I at least could roll dice during my opponent's turn. So they announced Mark IV, and then I read the big post that Matt put in there, and I was very much like Leonardo DiCaprio. It's like, well, you had my curiosity, now you have my attention. And it was like, okay, now I'm going to pay attention to this. But initially, you know, they're like, ooh, Signar, ooh, Orgoth. And neither one of those really did anything for me. And I was like, well, you know, I have my mercenaries. I have my Pharaoh. Depending on what the new rule system is like, I can absolutely take these out and kick them around and see what's going on. So I'll put a feather in the cap and see how things go along. Yeah, I'll pay attention, but I'm not like, you know, rattling sabers or shaking flags or anything just yet. And then they showed the picture of the Great Bear for Kador, which was one of my other initial main armies. I had my Breast Cancer Brawl, Breast Cancer Can Feel My Hate, Doom Reaver Spam, Butcher List that I would play in October, and, you know, pink Doom Reavers, and Butcher had a pink boa fur around him, and Fenris was on his motorcycle. So I was like, all right, you know, Kador is definitely one of those things. And the aesthetic of it was very much that aesthetic of War Machine, like way back in the War Machine that I enjoyed. So with the release of the Winter Corps army, that hooked me. Before, I was curious and I was interested and like, yeah, I wanted to see what's going on. But now it's like, here's something new and interesting that I like. Because, yeah, I can still play with my Steelheads, and I have all my 30-something metal Steelheads from way back in the day. And, you know, I have all my Pharaoh that I could play. But that felt like retreading. Like, I've already done that. You know, I've already figured that puzzle out. And, yeah, there's going to be new rules and new stuff. But there wasn't something new and shiny. And part of the hobby is buying things. We like to buy things. We like to gift ourselves new toys. So that factored in. It's like, ah, here are new toys that I can buy. And then when they were like, hey, we're having these quote-unquote battle boxes at Gen Con, and, ooh, the Kator one will be there too, I was like, hot damn, I'm going to be sitting on my computer, and I'm going to be waiting for the store to open, and I'm going to make my purchases, you know, right away. I'm like, and I bought one of each, two for me and one for a friend. And I was like, yeah. And then I was like, it'll get here when I get here. You know, whatever. But I was genuinely excited because I had something to latch onto to care about. Like, I care about this new Kador army because I like the look of the casters, I love the look of the jacks, all the infantry looks out. It's like the army as a whole just hits me square in the aesthetic appeal. But I accept and understand that that has not happened for the majority of players. And, you know, that's where we're having a lot of these people who are like, yeah, okay, I don't care.
Actually, I think it's a good segue into to talk with Gaston. Gaston, what are your thoughts been so far? I know what they are, but, you know,
so
fine with you sharing them again.
I think Jan actually really touched on an interesting point, and I really like the phrase that he used for it, which was retreading. He didn't want to feel like he was retreading. And that's kind of where I've been kind of stuck in an excitement rut, I guess, with it. Where, you know, we got this new edition, and you have, you know, quote-unquote, all these changes, and then you have these beta rules come out for Protectorate and beta rules come out for Crix. We download them, we get all excited, we look at them, and I'm like, these models haven't really changed. You know, they've made a tweak here and there to port, but it's a computer port. It's not a revision of how exemplars would play, how exemplars would look at an army, how exemplars would interact with each other. It is the Mark III rules, just kind of tweaked a little bit for Mark IV. And so if that's kind of setting my baseline expectation for all these prime armies, then, you know, we already all stopped playing this game. Now you're getting Mark IV with the same rules, you know, give or take, with some sandpapering or to fit for a game you already stopped playing, but now it's also going to be shallower because you have fewer tactical options with less warcasters. And so when I start looking at things like, you know, I really do like the aesthetics of the Signar. I think the Storm Legion, I'm talking like Tony now. I think the Storm Legion looks really cool. Yeah. I think the Orgoth look like a bunch of fart jokes. The howling silence. It's just like the noise you make when you get on an elevator.
I know.
The 80s metal band called, they'd like their covers back.
No, this is like an 80s metal band that is like they couldn't afford the metal, so they took some cardboard and they like duct tape over it so it looked metal. And then the Kador just doesn't have the appeal to me. It's, you know, it's a bunch of dudes running around in trench coats, maybe with pants, maybe without pants, I don't know.
Those are great coats.
So, but you found something in Signar that you liked, right?
I did, yeah.
So why not latch onto that more?
One, because I play with this group that likes to diversify, and you pretty much peed on them immediately.
We don't have to diversify.
No, we do. Like, you play Chaos Knights, I play Imperial Knights. This is how this works.
It's true.
All I do is exist to troll you.
I mean, you really do. So I feel like that's why we were born so close in dates. You know, you're the first one out, so I feel like I was born to troll you, but not really. I don't know.
6 days. 6 days apart.
6 days. Again, another even number. I said it earlier. I like even numbers.
I was just going to say that was a really tough double pregnancy on our mom. Normally they deliver a little closer together.
Generally.
Anyways.
I was stubborn.
You are a bitch. Anyways.
Now we know why these things go off for 2 hours.
Yes.
I know, right? We just sit here and insult each other. The other thing that I'm looking for is, again, that idea of retread, is you keep the elements from the previous editions of previous game that work very well. The focus system, the fury system. These are very good mechanics. The 2d6, the 3d6, the boosting, that bell curve mechanic. Those are all really, really good mechanics that are really ingrained into this game. These are things you should absolutely keep. But you start looking at all the individual models and their interactions and rules, and I don't see how the design space has grown. And I think that ultimately became one of people's complaints, whether or not they realized it with Mark III, is that they never made it so that the game could have more creativity in the rules, in the way the rules represent what the models are supposed to be within this story. And you just see the same rules. You know, you toss them all into a blender, and Ekaterina is Zerkova 1, 2, and 3 thrown in a blender, and you pick out certain rules. You can literally see exactly where she came from. You can see where those same exact rules came from. So even the new stuff is a retread. And then when I look at the actual caster design, there's a lot of blank space on those cards, man. And that's like particularly the Orgoth ones. And I'm just like, you're at this point where your company is 20 years old. You spent 20 years within this 2D6 framework that you've created. These should be looking more like the mature casters that you've designed towards the end of an edition, the end of Mark III, not the prime casters for Mark I. You know, where they need to have kind of these decision points for players to make in the middle of the caster's activation. You get that a little bit with, like, the Kador Sniper. He has the shot types. So you have a little bit of that with the flare and the reload. But you don't have a lot of that across all the different casters. You don't have a lot of interactions. And so I'm looking at this rut aesthetically. I'm looking at a rut with kind of the release structure. And I'm looking at a rut with how has this game grown and evolved in a new and interesting way for me, rather than just be a game that we all drifted away from.
I will interject on to one of those points that you said about the new casters. I think, and this is just from my perspective, a lot of what you're talking about with the design space for the casters has been folded into the spell rack and the command card. So since they're only going to have, what, like three casters per army, I think is what they're looking at. That's a very shallow pool of caster options. However, because I can take the sniper guy and I have this library of spells to fill his, I think it's two, his rack of two or whatever, and then the command card, I can now change that caster to a small degree many, many, many different ways. So it's like, okay, this time he's got Iron Flex, and this time he's got Fog of War, and this time he's got other Kador, Boundless Charge, if that's one of them, or whatever. You know, so I can tell, because if I like, and side note, I'm going to shake a finger, whoever decided to call her the Katrina, because all that says to me is Epic Katrina. It's freaking, no, drop the E, off the front of her damn name, it's Katrina. Otherwise, it's Epic Katrina. None of this Katrina nonsense. Anyway, that's just...
As a Cajun hurricane survivor, like, you just saying Katrina over and over is, like, really triggering me. Like, I'm crawling under the table, I'm grabbing my beers and my floaties, and I'm like, I'm ready for this now.
You know what? That's going to be my new psychological advantage when I play her against people from southern parts of the country.
It's true. That's a great tactic. Probably a terrible tactic.
Anyway, you know... In the motherland, we don't care. But, so you have these far more flexibility in these three casters that you have available. They'll have their core talents and skills, but then since they're a little bit Swiss Army knife, you'll be able to flex with them so that you have less potential to get bored playing the same three casters over and over again. That's my theory. It's the same reason why you have the Warjacks that have all the interchangeable arms. You only have two Warjacks, but with dozens of changes, because it got to a point where they're like, here's a new Warjack, and here's a new Warjack, and here's a new Warjack. Like, I already have eight heavy Warjacks. Like, what little niche spot are you trying to fill with this Warjack? It's like, the Destroyer has a Bombard and a Frost Axe. You really haven't released anything since then that really challenges just the sheer utility of that Jack. Yeah, you got all these fancy little weird ones, but if I just want a solid gun with an axe, here's my Destroyer.
So I think it goes back to, right, is why are we, let's go back to the question, right? Why choose Mark IV, right? I think for me, right, when I think of this question, it goes back to me on the nostalgia, right? And maybe I shouldn't be relying on nostalgia so much, but that's what got me here, right? I love that game. I want to try to get it to where it was again, or at least somewhat, right? Like, for me, I'm choosing Mark IV because it's, I love the rules. I think the 2d6 system makes a lot of sense. I think the rules were always very competitive, and I see a lot of things in this new rule set that seems like a lot of fun. Also, like, I feel like as a company, I want to see what Privateer Press is going to do in the next year, right? To the extent, right, where we're hosting a PAX Unplugged tournament with Tried and True, right? Like, we're going to try to go as hard as we can into this game to see if it can be successful or not, right? It's going to be, at the end of the day, it's going to be what Privateer Press can go and do for the consumers, for the fans. But I really want them to come around, right? I want people to go pick up their old armies, their old Mark II, Mark III armies, see what armies out there for them, for their faction, and just give it a try. Play a 50-point army. Play a 75-point game. Whatever you want to do, just go out and try it and just see if you like it again. Don't go in there thinking negative, like, oh, I've already seen these rules before. Like, what's different? I want them to try to be – to give it a chance.
Well, and that ties into the why should somebody care? And Gaston had a good point on it. It's Mark IV is not a rampantly different version of Mark III, right? The core rules are predominantly the same with some tweaks. The armies are predominantly the same with some sizes. But the reason why I'm really getting into it, or that I'm going to be dedicating some time and some money and effort into it, is to quote Princess Leia at the end of Rogue One, what have they given us? What do they give you? Hope. In the hope of a resurgence to that kind of Mark II time frame. And that's where this stuff kind of reminds me of, is that Mark II time frame where we didn't have just like, hey, back in my day when we only had like two casters and unit of six guys and, you know, two, three jacks. You know, but it kind of reminisces to that. It kind of rhymes like back when you had a few casters, a few units, a few jacks with options, and smaller forces. And if Mark IV can be an evolved version of the Mark II beginning heyday stuff, then I'm absolutely on board for that, because I think that was really some of the best War Machine, where we had some fancy things and we had some fancy units, and, you know, and you had a fair number of models on the table, but it wasn't this 117 points worth of, you know, 60 models and these giant wombo combos that if you misdeployed your caster half an inch to the left, then you get a Titan to the face. And good job. You know, that was fun. It took more time to set up than it did to play. So my hope is that Mark IV goes, you know, rewinds that clock to that Mark II heyday of good, solid size army choices with flexibility in them and the opportunity to play a fair size game with enough models to provide a challenge, but not where you're sitting there, you know, with 60 infantry, 50 infantry, whatever on the board and five colossals and what other hyperbole I can throw into that. So that's why I'm getting into Mark IV, is that kind of a, in my mind, that's where I see them trying to go, and I hope they get there, and I want to try and help them get there.
So that touches on a really interesting thought experiment that I was having the other day, which is, you know, when people set out to design a game, they have an idea of, like, what do the armies look like on the table? What are the compositions of the armies? And you see this within various games, various different systems. You know, in 40K, you have the Force Org chart that forces you to take a certain amount of troops and forces you to take a certain amount of leaders. With Guild Ball, you had the crew construction where you had, you know, a goalie and a striker or whatever the different positions are from soccer. It's like a shitty football. American football is way better.
Point of order, the only two requirements for a Guild Ball team was a captain, a mascot, and four players. The actual positions that the players had did not have any bearing in the game whatsoever.
Counterpoint of order, you just listed three things for two. Boom, boom.
Well, I'm a thinker.
Nah, that's cool. Yeah, because they introduced the goalies in like season three. I don't remember when the goalies came out.
There's only two goalies.
Actually, Guild Ball is kind of a nice one because they only ever released two captains, which I thought kind of sank it without more Warcaster equivalents. But, okay, so obviously I quit playing before the end.
I love this. This is great. Keep going.
I am getting corrected a lot. This is amazing. I love
this
it.
This is awesome. Yeah, I need to come on more often just to correct Gaston.
So my question going back to you is, when you think of a War Machine force, obviously, we had, you know, the themes are enforcing kind of that construction layer. The themes are gone somewhat in Mark IV, you know, now you're down to an army size. What do you feel like a Mark IV army looks like? Is it infantry heavy? Is it jack heavy? Are you going to see a mixture? Because when you start looking at how you're making your purchases with these boxes, a lot of times you're only getting, you know, jack A, jack B, and jack C, and then you're going to have to go out and buy them separately. So it feels like just on initial pass, you're actually going to be looking at a lot of infantry machine.
So I think the basic structure, right, of it, for a 50-point army, you have to bring a Warcaster and you have to bring at least one Warjack. That's the absolute minimum, right? For 75, you need to bring two Warjacks. For 100, you need to bring at least three. So it base depends. Goal? Huh?
Is that a hard rule that you have to bring at least one?
Yep, that's a hard rule. For 50 points, you have to bring a minimum of one Warjack. For 75 points, it's a minimum of two. And if you do 100 points, you need to bring a minimum of three Warjacks. So you're already bringing a minimum amount of Jacks. Huh?
I wonder if Colossals will count as a Jack in 100 points.
They I don't know, but there was an alternative for the 100 points where you could bring up to 3 free Battle Engine / Warjack Colossals if you want to play that. But I, for the standard games, right, you bring one of those. I know in 50-point armies, you cannot bring a Colossal. They specifically call that out. No huge bases in 50-point. So you probably will look at more of a you know, initially at least, right, a more heavy infantry, just because you're going to be getting, like for me, right, I'm going to start out with 4 Warjacks, which is not what everyone else is going to start out with. And I start out with 4 Warjacks because I bought the Gen Con box. So because I bought the Gen Con box, I get 2 Warjacks. I got a second caster, and then I'm going to have my normal army. And those Warjacks themselves, they get transformed into 64 different combinations, which is pretty awesome. As I've looked through it more, I've seen more and more combinations I like. I think there probably needs to be a little bit of a tweak of the points, because the heavy Warjack, there's like one that's 1 point and the other ones are 3 points. And it's kind of dumb not to take the 1 point one just for cost efficiency. And it's a pretty good head for 1 point. But like you look at these other things, like with like range and all these other things, there's so much fun stuff to do. So I think it's going to be whenever you first start, right, you're probably going to see 2 Warjacks on the table initially, until people decide to go out and say, hey, I want to buy more of the Striker Jacks, or I want to buy more Great Bears to try to play something else.
Well, and I think one of the things to also keep in mind is the size of squads is going to be smaller. It's going to be, what, six-man squads?
I think it's 5 for most of them.
But then, like, some of them you can, like, oh yeah, it's like 3, 4, 5, or 6 if you have, like, a standard or whatever, or something like that, as opposed to like a 10 to 12 man squad. So taking 3 squads in Mark IV is going to be 2/3 of the number of bodies as 3 squads in Mark III. You know, I'm not going to be able to field 30 steelhead halberdiers, because that's just not going to be the size of the squads. It's going to be 18 halberdiers. You know, assuming there's not like an attachment or something for them. So I think we're going to find a balance to answer Gaston's question. I think the boxes, the army boxes that Privateer Press is releasing, like these starter boxes, is kind of their snapshot idea. This is what we think a force would look like. And then you have that add-on box, and it's still going to... not adding another jack. If you buy the army box and the booster box, whatever the hell they're going to call it, you're going to have 2 jacks, a caster, you know, a couple solos, a couple units, you know, maybe a cavalry or something like that. And then, you know, you can add another jack or two on top of that. So you'll have flex in that. You won't necessarily be able to play everything, but you'd be like, okay, I'm going to take these 3 units of infantry and this jack, and then, you know, the cavalry or what have you. I think that's kind of where they're aiming for.
Which I think, yeah, that's what they had said, was like, hey, if you buy the starter box and the expansion, and if you buy one more jack, you have the ability to play up to 100 points with options, right? So you can switch out stuff. I you know, if you just buy just the one starter box, I think you can go anywhere from 48 to 65 points, depending. And I think it's depending on how you build your Warjacks, right? If you obviously build the more expensive ones, they're going to be higher, all that stuff. So with those additional models, what I think is most interesting is they had said, hey, we made these starter boxes. We didn't necessarily intend people to buy multiples of those, but each of those units, you can run those units, multiples of those units, right? They're not like a FA1, I'm assuming at least. I'm pretty sure they're like FA2 or FA3. So you could see people trying to go heavier, right? But I guess what someone pointed out, right, if you're running a 75-point army, if you run 2 light jacks, you probably will be able to field more infantry, but depending on how you build your heavy jacks, it's probably just going to end up being less infantry just because, right? So they do have that structure. It's not the theme force, which I think is great, right? I think the Mark II theme forces were really interesting because they were really, really tight and structured. When we went to Mark III, it was very generalized and it gave everything a ton of free points. So you're running with, you know, 115, 120 points on the table. And then in Mark IV, it's like, hey, this is a self-contained. You get only have these 3 casters. These things are going to be in sync with all this stuff. This is a lot more structured. I think it's the right choice for right now. And you can get Merc options, though. which the marker options look really cool, at least on we haven't seen the rules yet, but they look neat. So that'll add more variety and spice to your list.
And it's kind of funny, you know, like retrospectively and all that stuff, looking back, I never understood why people didn't like Theme Forces. I was always perfectly fine with them.
I didn't mind them because I feel like in Mark II, for the most part, if you're not looking at what the Elemental one, and there's a couple other that were just egregious, I think they added a nice little flavor to it. They had some really neat things that made things change things up, but I feel like I only ran in theme probably half the time. I would run the Gravediggers theme, and I think one or two others for Convergence Stars ran Destructive Initiative. But I can't even recall what that one was. Actually, no, sorry, they didn't even have a Destructive Initiative back then. I want to say the Lucant theme a lot, but that's about it. I didn't play as many themes in Mark II. I didn't think they were bad for the most part.
I mean, even by the end of Mark II, I was exclusively in theme. And, like, even Elemental Evolution with Calandra, like, that was beatable.
It was beatable, but damn, was it annoying.
Not really. I mean, Battle Splatter Batter. Wiped it right up.
I think the thing with theme for me was when it turned a point where not playing in theme was a detriment.
But I think that was Mark III. Mark III, if you did not play theme, you were actively hurting yourself because you were playing down 15 to 20 points depending on your theme. And it wasn't as tightly structured, right? You could put any Warcaster in there for the most part, right? There was a couple that you had to have specific Warcasters, and they had specific units, but they would just give ridiculous benefits. And like before, right, with Mark II, you had tiers, right? So you had to have certain things included in there to get up to those higher level tiers to get better things. You didn't have that in Mark III. It was just like, hey, if you build out of this theme, here you go.
Yeah, if you took more specific things, you would get these bonuses, but you wouldn't necessarily get free models, you know, because then you would also have the Warjack points. So it's like, let's play a 75-point game with 25 to 30 Warjack points with 15 to 17 Seamless points. So, yeah. Well, good thing that's over with, anyway.
True. Very true. Everyone. I've tried to cover my mic and covered everything when I'm coughing and sneezing. I have a little bit of a cold still, so I'm trying to make this disgusting.
And the reason why I kind of end up on this rabbit hole is because I like distracting everybody, is also, to me, like, we're leaning harder into themes with these armies, this concept of armies. Basically, armies are Kohl's store of theme lists, because you're not getting your Warjack points anymore, and you're not getting your savings anymore, but you still have all the restrictions.
Yes, and everyone, no.
Everyone is, for the most part, happy because you have a visual theme that's enforced upon you, which the original themes were doing a visual theme enforced upon you. You had the knight theme, you had the gator theme, you had the pig theme, you had whatever nonsense bullshit Tony was playing theme that looked like toilet bowls.
That's rude.
People just took shits in them.
This
is half jacks with Darius.
I barely even played Darius in Mark III. I actually don't even think I put Darius on the table in Mark III. I disagree in the fact that I'm trying to think of the best way to explain this. Yes, they're broken off in the themes, but they're more structured, right? So it's not going to get as bonkers as it was like back then, right? Like, you're just not going to have free points that are available. Yeah, you don't have... I think it's good and bad, right? I also think it's really good in the fact that it makes it easier for people to come in and play the game. Like, it got super daunting at the end of Mark III. There's so much stuff out there, and I don't think that the CIDs did anything to help the game at all, to just add a bunch of stuff there that just didn't make sense, right? And you had to figure out, okay, what weird thing would work with this? How do I go back and look at this old catalog to see what can go and play, right? Hey, let me go look at my long gunners. Oh, just kidding. They suck. I'm going to go with my trencher long gunners because they're significantly better, right? And they're the exact same point cost, if not cheaper. Actually, I think trencher long gunners might have been cheaper. So they were already getting rid of old stuff, right? So why not just, like, kick it into these nice structured box where if I go and play, I like, hey, I like this army. Let me go buy this, and now I can go fully play this game instead of having to go piecemeal and say, oh, I want to buy this model because it looks really cool. But now all of a sudden, the rules aren't as good as what I thought they were going to be.
I mean, CID was easily the stupidest, most brilliant thing I ever saw.
It was.
Because at least then I could advocate for my stuff to get broken. Sorry, Jan.
Sorry, Jan. Yeah, you go.
No, you've had your grumpy time. Now it's my turn. No, but if you look at War Machine, if you look at the history of all the different factions and stuff, there's always been different themes in the army, right? Like, before theme lists were a thing, you had you look at the Protectorate, you had the Knights, and you had the Flame Guard, and you had the Monks. There was always themes, and then we wound up with theme lists where, you would get benefits for playing into those themes. But now I think the next evolution is now we have themed armies where, for example, Kador is now being broken up into multiple themed armies where they said was the next one like Lords of Umbri or something like that.
Yep.
So before, you would have Vlad with his Iron Fangs and Tayazi also running around with the Man O' Wars and the Winter Guard. So you would just have all this mixed together, and then if you brought a theme list, then you're like, okay, well, I'm only running Winter Guard. So what Project Quest looks to be doing is kind of skipping that middle step and saying, well, if you want to play Winter Guard or Winter Corps, here's the army for that. If you want to play Lords of Umbri and the Iron Fangs and stuff, and I only say Iron Fangs as an assumption. I don't know if that's what they're going to have in there, but, with the riders and stuff. And that's this army. And then if you wanted to do Man of War, that's this army. And then we have the Linkpin cadres that you can then get. And then that can be used in every different army as well. So I think what they've done is they have made it a little bit more structured, but also given people the opportunity to either play a theme or ignore a theme in an army without feeling like they have to bring Tayazi assassins in their Winter Guard army because it's something that, something that's a strong choice. If you wanted to be an aesthetic hound and say, I want to play just Winter Guard, but the Tayazi are really good, so now I got to play Tayazi because, the Mendo says this is competitive, that's no longer an issue. It's just, if Privateer Press is doing their job correctly, you can say, I'm playing the Winter Corps army with these options, and this is a strong, well-rounded, thematic, competitive option. Boom.
See, and I think this goes back into why choose Mark IV, because you can actually go play these nice thematic armies that you really want to play, right? And you don't feel like you're going to be penalized by playing them, right? Because you could say, look, like, this army is nice and balanced, and it's a lot of fun to play. I'm going to put this on the table. It's all going to be in the theme. It's awesome, right? And then you can build like thematic tables around it for whenever you go to tournaments to go play in that. I like that with Mark IV. I think it's nice. It's a resetting of the rules. Even when you go look at like the Trencher theme, right? Like I'm like, I was going through the Trencher stuff. I forgot how many Trencher pieces that there were in the Signar army. It's easily like half the catalog is Trencher stuff, right? Which it's nice.
It's a big collection.
It's a huge collection.
So I'm going to jump on Gaston's side of things and say,
no,
and this,
don't do that.
And this is where I think Privateer Press misstep is. I like what they have planned for the Mark IV army, right? Were I them, I would have announced Mark IV, donut the cool models for the new thing, and not said a damn thing about any of the armies that are yet to come out. Or give us more information. Because what's happening is you have people, I'll pick on Gaston for Ops, and say he likes Protectorate of Menoth, and it's like, here's a new edition. Well, of course, he plays Protectorate of Menoth, so what is Protectorate of Menoth going to look like in this new edition? Oh, there's no Protectorate of Menoth. Okay, so what am I supposed to do? Well, we'll have these armies come, there'll be two prime armies that you can use. Okay, when? Or down the road. Okay. Well, who's going to be in there? What? Oh, okay. So I'm limited to three casters. Which casters? You'll find out end of October. So I think if Privateer Press had given us less information and just been like a movie, like a trailer for a movie, like Mark IV, this is the reason, here's the cool new shit coming, we will have rules for all your things, you know, when we release in October, blah, 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 fireworks, right? Everyone would be like, oh my God, what's going on? We don't know. But nobody would know. But when you give too little information, like when they did with the Protectorate and the Crick, people start to try and extrapolate data from that. And then they chew on it too much, and then it leaves a sour taste in your mouth. Because, okay, well, and this is data, so this is not like the finished Crick's thing. And it's like, okay, well, if this is Crick's, then what's happening with my Pharaoh? What's happening with my Steelhead? Can I use my Gators? You know, what's going on? And I think that causes more detriment to the community, because violence is all right, but too little information is worse, because then people will take these little molehills and create mountains about them because they have nothing else to talk about. So I think if they had given us, these are the lists of the prime legacy armies, right? And these are the casters. That's honestly all I want. I want to know what casters I can expect to bring in the prime legacy army. I don't even need to know what they're going to look like. But if you say, hey, Pharaoh are going to get a list, cool. I have 8 Pharaoh casters, right? Something like that. As well as check whether or not you count the Helga on the bike or whatever. So automatically I'm losing.
But we count Helga on the bike. We count
her. So automatically I'm losing 5 casters, right? Because if a prime army, the prime legacy army is, army's going to have 3 casters.
I wonder if for Mercs and the limited factions, they're going to have more than 3. Because if you say, hey, Mercs is going to have 3, Pharaoh, Gators, and Mercs are all part of Mercenaries now. So you're going to see only 1 from each of them? That makes 0 sense.
It's basically the Rulic thing. These things that were mercenary forces are going to become standalone forces. So like, for example, you'll have Pharaoh Prime, so it'll just be all Pharaoh stuff. And Gators will just be all Gator stuff. And the Rulic will just be all Rulic stuff. And the Steelheads will be Damiano, I'm guessing, McBain, and maybe Magnus.
Probably. I don't want to ever be Magnus, too.
Magnus one was really the one where he was meandering about with the Steelheads and stuff. But anyway. Yeah. But I think that's the thing, is you built these strong personalities in these armies, and now it's like, hey, we're going to kill 4/5 of them, remove from play, right? We're going to remove them from your cycle of playing. I don't count unlimited for anything, because that's not me. Unlimited is a compensation to people who really want to just keep playing Mark III.
Okay.
With all the toys they currently have. And I get that, because you pay for those toys, you want to play for those toys. Good on Privateer Press for keeping that, as opposed to just being like, hey, Peg Sneakers, we're going forward with Prime only. So good luck to them with that. But if you're gonna say, hey, moving forward, you're having limited resources, at least tell me who these personalities are, so that I can be excited about these personalities. That gives you something to be excited about. So if Gaston's like, I only played Resnick and freaking who's the dude with the ball and chain? It's been a while.
Testament of Menoth? You're talking about Amon Ad-Razza.
Amon.
Yeah, Amon Ad-Razza.
My God, you do know me so well. Those are the two I played.
Yeah, you know, but then they came out and they said, okay, with Protectorate, we're, you know, it's going to be Kriok, Fiora. Yeah, I can't remember. I can't believe I remember these names off the top of my head. So, you know, and Testament. Then you can be like, ah, crap, you know, Amon's not playing, but I've never played Testament before. So now I can get a Testament. I can paint a Testament, and I can prep to learn how to use Protectorate with Testament leading the charge. Right, I think if they were, you know, they told us what armies you know, we're going to get for Prime, I think they need to tell us what casters, which will then give people the opportunity to plan a little bit, because you have a general theme, a feel of how a caster plays. So if somebody says, okay, you're playing Signar and it's going to be the Striker and it's going to be Siege, you know, Brisbane, and it's going to be Alien 1, you have a general idea of like, okay, this is how this army is going to play, right?
Yeah, like we know just through spoilers, right, that the Trencher one, we at least know two of them, it's Siege 2 and Kray, which has been exciting, right? So you kind of understand the basics of what's going to happen, but you don't know that about any of the other armies.
Exactly, you know, I mean, and I think...
We've been going through in our internal chat, which is kind of that idea of how long a lead time between when you announce it and when you deliver. And has that been too long?
Yes and no, right? I think that if you look at a lot of other games, right, they announce it in July. I understand the official release is not until January. I get that, right? They're releasing the rules at the end of this month. October 28th, we're getting the rules, we're getting the models. In the very beginning of November, we're getting the steamroller. All of that is coming out. Rules might change a little bit. I don't think they're going to dramatically change at all from the time from... we get it in October, so we get it from January. So I'm counting October to be the time where the rules are coming out. That is a 3-month time window. They announced this the middle of July. I don't think that's unrealistic. I wish they would have given us more. Obviously, I want it sooner because I want to go and play stuff. I want to get stuff ready. But I don't think 3 months is that unrealistic, right? Like, that's not terrible.
In modern times, that's too long, man.
I mean, look at I don't know. Like, I look at trying to go back, Atomic Mass Games, when they announced, hey, that this new stuff is coming out for Marvel Crisis Protocol. I want to say that was 2 to 3 month wait time. You know, when they've announced other stuff, games I've been a part of, I've seen like a 2 to 3 month wait time.
I think, like I said before, I think they should not have released the beta rule. Or the beta critics and protectors stuff.
Why?
Hold on. Finish out Mark 3. Say, hey, we're releasing Mark 4. End of October, we're going to have the beta rules for stuff for you to play. Finish out Mark 3. Kick ass, take names. And when Mark 4 drops, the beta's going to drop, and we're going to go forward. Because there's no point giving us the rules to Mark 4 if we don't have the armies to play.
I think they try to give us that with giving us two armies. Was it the right choice? I don't know. If I like Protectorate and if I like Krix, I might have been more excited about it. I don't like either one of them, right? But I've seen what people are doing is they're playing a Mark 3.5, right? They're playing Mark 4 rules with Mark 3 models, trying to understand how the game plays. I've been seeing a lot of bad reports come over that, and it's been kind of fun to see.
And I agree that's good, but it's also, in my mind, wrong. Because they're not playing Mark IV. They're guessing what their armies would look like. Because we know Jax are completely different. We know, so there's some people that have done the math and they're like, okay, if I do my algebra, this Jax would in essence cost this. That's way too much work for me. Either give me the full list or don't give me anything to chew on that I don't have enough to chew on, right? So... again, this is just how I would have done it. I would have been like, these are the prime legacy armies that are going to be coming out. These are the casters that you're going to be able to use. You know, beta rules drop at the end of October with the beta army rules. And we'll have a feedback system so that you can feedback with your rules. That way you get the whole beginning of Mark IV together as opposed to, here's the rules and two armies that some people may or may not have, and then good luck trying to figure out what these other things are, but we don't know what else is going to happen, kind of thing. So I think it was too little information that allowed for people to dwell on when there wasn't enough to chew on, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So... just a little bit of a time cap, right? We're at 9:24. I don't think we've done a great job necessarily choosing why Mark IV. I think we just talked about a lot of the things. but I do think we've had some good conversations on this. So I just want to kind of bring that in. So like, what are, you know, I don't want to wrap up right now. I'll probably say another wrap up in a couple minutes, but like,
you may why... take the opportunity to talk. So I'll just ramble.
I know. Let's just go back to the question, right? Jan, I'm gonna ask you first, right? Why are you choosing Mark IV? At the end of the day, what is your choice for Mark IV? We talked about it a little before. I just want to hear it one more time for you. Why are you going to choose Mark IV?
So, and like yourself, a lot of it is based on nostalgia. I played War Machine for a decade and a half of my life. I traveled around the world to play it. I was a press ganger in Okinawa, Japan. I painted my models, my Harrow, while I was deployed to Afghanistan, you know, the infamous Afghani pigs that made it into a no quarter. I've been to Lock and Load. I've been to the Invitationals before it became Lock and Load, tournaments around the world. The core collection of my friends that I have now come from my time playing War Machine. One of my best friends, he and I only ever hang out when we get hotel rooms together for conventions. Tom Wolf, shout out to Tom. You know, and that was, we met at the Invitational by sharing, this Air Force guy and this Navy guy sharing a hotel room. I have a ton of good memories about War Machine, and I've missed the game because I just haven't enjoyed it. So I am hopeful that Mark IV recaptures that heyday time frame of second edition where you had a good number of, you know, it's good to have a solid collection of three casters, two jacks, two chassis of jacks, not even loadouts, a couple of different units, and then a couple of cadres to add to that, and have a good solid thing as opposed to this 100 unit option brawl that may or may not work for you. So I'm choosing to support Mark IV with my money and my time because I hope to recapture those memories and those times that I had previously and to share new ones with people moving forward. That's why. Also, buying new things helps Privateer Press continue to exist as a company. You know, I can play with all the models I have in my favorites, and that'll be fine and fun, but that doesn't pay anybody's salaries or keep the lights on or keep the 3D printers going. So I'm thankful, and I wholly admit this, I'm thankful that the Kador Winter Core catches my eye to a point where I want to collect it. And I hope that Privateer Press is able to release the armies maybe a little bit faster, that catches people's eyes so that they're excited to play with the new thing, not just satisfied to play with their current thing.
Awesome. Gaston, my question for you is going to be, what would get you to choose Mark IV?
Well, it's kind of funny because y'all are making me feel like a bad person here because I don't rate nostalgia like at all. I don't believe that companies are good to consumers, and I don't think that consumers should have any loyalty to companies. So it is, what is the merits of Mark IV? Are you going to deliver a tactical game for me with good depth, good replay value, interesting visuals? You know, it's going to be the... I mean, even when I kept playing Mark III a little bit after people were dropping off, I was like, I'm having fun. Am I having fun with this game? And usually I define that by, you know, my choices. Am I getting to make interesting choices? Or are these kind of like false choices? 40K, I feel like, is a very good example of that. They're like, oh, yeah, you got, you know, 30 different war gear options and 50 different warlord traits and 80 different stratagems, and you're going to use three of each. That's it.
Like, you know, most.
Yeah, I mean, there. Yeah, it's this idea of false options.
About range Kador Jacks, the last podcast or last cast or two ago, I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, am I actually getting 16 Jack combinations, or am I really just getting a Vanquisher and a Reckoner, and you know, to hell with a Castigator? Because even though they were like, hey, yeah, you have all these Jackson kits, we already had the multi-jack kits. You know, I had a Reckoner, a Castigator, and a Purifier.
That's fair.
I'm pure mercenary. You guys are like so much nicer than I am. I'm like just a jerk.
No, you know, it's fine because it's your take on it, right? So it's how we're going to get you to enjoy Mark IV. And I don't know if that's going to happen, right? I've been really candid about this, that to get you and Kevin on board is going to be, it's going to be a challenge, right? Hopefully on November 5th, some of us can play some games together and convince you guys otherwise. But if not, it's fine.
I just like to say every time that you put an army on the table, I just think your theme is me rolling over you.
Yeah, that's why. It's a classic PG move, right? Let the person beat you, even though you are actually whooping me every single time, so you get more enjoyment out of the game. And I just give you sad puppy dog eyes. That why'd you just have to beat my army again?
Remember that time you tried to introduce me to Marvel Crisis Protocol?
Yeah, I do. I do remember that. And you actually didn't like that game, and that's fine.
I can make one last point.
Yes.
And Gaston's a very good example of this because he has a very pragmatic and practical viewpoint of the mechanics of playing a war game, which is fine because that's what this is, right? You know, Tony and I can boon about the wrappings of it, but likewise, if it's not a good war game, then it doesn't matter how pretty it is, right? So I think that over the next year, you're going to have stages of people that either support the game or don't. Like for right now, there's nothing that really appeals to Gaston. So the question of why could he care is not answered. Whereas with Tony and I, we can't have Gaston answer the question the same we are because we have a different equation to it. So in a year when Horde released their two armies at Gen Con, you know, I think we're going to see more and more people give Mark IV a chance as it fleshes out more, as is more the Mark IV army. The folks now that are excited and jumping on board, we're acknowledging that we're doing this out of a fandom, out of, you know, seeking nostalgia, but also as trying to be trailblazers and pathfinders that help the game exist long enough for the stodgy stick-in-the-mud dice mechanic mofos like Gaston to jump on board later on.
So we're about 2 minutes over time. I do want to wrap this up, but I also want to give a shout out. If you guys were not here live with us, our chat has been blowing up. You could see it whenever you're watching this recast, but I just want to give a shout out to Sam, to Solus Sheridan, to Haran, to Veil of Darkness, to Mike. I hope I didn't miss anyone. Oh, to Joe. You guys have been super active in the chat. I really appreciate you guys have put in a lot of really good points, right? As the, hey, what's going on? Like, this is our thoughts on it. I really appreciate that. Please keep that going. This is kind of what gets us, you know, on here and make sure we're trying to do these live casts every other week. So I will wrap this up.
If you want to have me return, please make a comment and do so.
Yes, exactly. So we're going to wrap this up. We were going to cast again in another 2 weeks, and that'll be the eve of Mark IV. Not too sure what the top's going to be. It's going to be on the 26th. Mark IV is going to release on the 28th. Maybe if we're super lucky, Privateer Press will release like some more stuff so we can kind of see things. But my question is going to be for you all is, why are you choosing Mark IV? Or what does Privateer Press need to show you to get you on board to doing Mark IV?
What's missing to get you excited?
What's the thing to get you excited? With that being said, thank you all very much for tuning in to another episode of Turn Extension.